B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, we'll get to the baseball stuff in a second. Let me just first clean up a few calls here on the Brady topic. Anthony in Somerset. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing, guys? This is Anthony. Pretty much big point right here for me. I've been watching. I watch your show every single day. It's a synonymous with my daily life. Pretty much, Tom Brady, the Buccaneers, this whole thing was well planned out way before. It's no conspiracy thing to it. You know, I think Cam Newton's coming home. Give him another year. The Garoppolo thing, that's a bust. All of it's BS. You know what? Felger knows head on, spot on every day. Same thing with Mads. There's also just speculation, but at the same time, it's direct. So wow. Let's just get Cam Newton in 2021 and call it a day.
Okay, babe. I have very little idea what the hell you were talking about there. Very little. Other than you want Cam Newton in 2021. I don't think this was in the bag at all, Maz. I don't think it was one of these preconceived things that he had, you know, labeled for a year. Like, you know, LeBron to the Lakers or something like that. I don't think it was that at all. I think he got to market and started soliciting offers. He pursued San Francisco. Something tells me he might have pursued the Giants, New York Giants. You know, so something tells me he got to market and was like, where is everybody? And started drumming up some business is how I feel that it was.
So what about the Gronk part of it?
I think Gronk was waiting to just find out where he went, and Gronk was going to go.
Yeah, and so that's the part that I do think was preconceived. In other words, Gronk was only going to play if Brady left the Patriots and ended up somewhere Gronk could play. And so San Francisco, I don't know. I mean, you know, George Kittle there, and maybe they had Gronk as a second tight end. So, I'm not as sure about his Tampa, but Gronk was in the bag.
Yeah, sure.
Gronk was only going to play with Brady wherever Brady ended up.
But I just think through the reporting, Mass, that Brady pursued San Francisco. It feels to me like John Lynch and Shanahan basically confirmed it.
Yes.
You know, in their commentary, say when you hear that the greatest player ever wants to come home, you got to think about it. And so I think Brady was, you know, soliciting these offers because the market wasn't what he thought it was going to be.
Billy, absolutely.
Go ahead, Billy and Taunton. What do you got?
I think Brady should be culpable because of two reasons. He went to the most loaded offense where Jameis Winston threw for 5,000 yards. And the other reason is because, like, well, he doesn't think he thinks he still, like, can mentally, like, you know, he's still with it. He doesn't think he's going to fall off the cliff. So I think those 2 points, he should probably be as culpable as Belichick if he fails.
Okay, yeah, there should be pressure on him, Billy. Absolutely. This is what he wanted. He wanted a nice coach. He wanted respect from his coaches. He wanted input into the offense. He wanted to be surrounded by good talent. He wanted his tight end back with him. He wanted a better cut. He got it all. He got everything that he wanted. So here we go. Here we go, Tommy. You're going to be back to the MVP level, right?
Oh, look, again, there is expectation there now whether Brady wants to admit that or not. So, and look, I hate the whole Jameis Winston threw for 5,000 yards thing.
Why?
I can't tell you how much I hate it.
Why?
Because the yards are useless.
Well, how about the 30 touchdowns then?
What's that?
How about the 30 touchdowns then?
Okay, so look, but again, I think he also threw 30 picks. So, but and if you throw a lot, you can put up volume numbers. And I'm not telling you that there aren't weapons in Tampa Bay. I mean, at the end of the day, Brady has the artillery there for him to produce this year. He does. He has the artillery there. I just, to me, it's not going to be based on volume, though, because if they throw it a million times, he still has to be, if he throws it a million times and he throws 25 picks this year, which I'm not saying he would do, because I don't think he will do that. Well, that's not great. I mean, I'm not into the volume stats. Now, a lot of teams will throw a lot if they're good at it. I think Tampa has a chance to be good at it, and Brady could throw a lot. So, but he's got everything he needs there. To Mike's point,
everything
is,
he wanted. Everything
well, right,
he asked
everything
for.
He wanted. Better way to put it.
So let's see it, Tommy. Tim and Quincy. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, you guys nailed it on the head. I think last year when Brady was miserable at 8-0, you got to remember he had Newhouse at left tackle. He basically only had Edelman as a receiver.
Tim.
Yeah, I mean, it's that simple.
Okay, but he was 8-0. You're not disappointed in the fact that he was unhappy at 8-0?
Yeah, but you could tell going forward, Felger, that when he played better competition, he was going to have to put up 30 points against Kansas City and Baltimore, and you knew he couldn't do it. It was impossible to do it.
Yeah, I don't think it was impossible to score. What was the score of the Kansas City game here? Did they score 13? You're telling me Kansas City, that crap bag defense, they weren't capable of scoring more than 13 points?
I want to say it was like 20-7. I'll check the score, but I also think they might have had a defensive score in that game.
23-16.
So the Pats scored 16 freaking points. So you think it was just damn near impossible for them to, not to play better than 16 points on offense against that crappy defense? Ah, stop it. They were underachieving. They had enough talent to be better than that. I'm not telling you they had enough talent to put up 45 on the board or something like that, but they were better than that, Tim. Matt in Framingham, go ahead.
You know, guys, I don't know if I remember the last time that we've had a topic like this with Brady and Belichick and the cliche, Michael, that you've used, slave to the scoreboard, could be any more accurate than what we're going to see here whenever football starts. Because I feel like that one of these two guys, Brady or Belichick, one's going to walk away looking like a genius. The other's going to walk away with a big, giant dunce cap on his head.
Huh. I think they have a chance to both look good. I hope they do. I hope they do. And it just, the battle rages. And it's sort of undetermined, like, you know, split decision. They both win. They both succeed. Like, that's what I'm rooting for. I am. I truly am. If one is, who's the favorite? Who's the favorite, Maz, to have more success going forward?
Brady. I mean, I just think right now it's set up for Brady. So Brady's not going to be, and this again, this is why there is some pressure on Brady, whether he wants to admit it or not. He's got a talent. He's going to have good weather. He's got a coach that wants to put the ball in the air. And so he's in a good division. I mean, New Orleans is good, but the other two teams blow, if you ask me. Like, they have a favorable schedule because all the good teams they play are at home. So I think that everything is lined up for Brady to be in the playoffs. Bill, in the short term, is going to have a greater challenge.
Okay. Yeah, just because there's such an unknown with his quarterback. No one really knows whether or not Jared Stidham's going to be able to have the sack more than anything else to get through this season and be a successful quarterback in the NFL.
I mean, it's time frame. I think Brady for sure is the favorite this year. The next 12 months, it's Brady. And if Brady doesn't do more this year, he's in trouble in this argument. He's in trouble, you know, and who's going to have more success? Because Bill, I think, is, you know, ultimately going to reset the roster and figure it out in 2, 3, 4 years' time, you know, be back. And in 2, 3, 4 years' time, Brady's done. So he better make hay this year. All right, on Major League Baseball and their return to play and the battle that's brewing between the owners and the players, I was going to ask for a developing opinion. My opinion has not developed other than just to become stronger. I'm rooting for the owners in this so badly, I can't tell you. And how much I distrust and don't like the Major League Baseball Players Union, how I feel they've really, in no other sport, in no other league, I feel the Players Union in baseball has hurt their sport. And I blame them for the problems in the sport, and I blame them for whatever impasse we're about to have. And I am hoping now, Maz, more than ever, that the owners say, nope, rest of the way, it's a 50-50 revenue split, and if you don't like it, we're not playing. And I hope they hold the line. That's my developing opinion. I hope the owners stick to it, hold the line, and if the players don't agree to it, shut it down. That's what I'm rooting for. How about you?
Well, so look, I'd be surprised at the end of the day if the owners do that, because if they end up being the ones that, for whatever reason, show an unwillingness to compromise. And look, generally right now, I think that they're in the right. Okay, I think that the owners right now are in the right. But if we find out later on that the players are willing to make concessions and the owners are hardlining it, then I don't think that solves the problem either.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Okay, so look, all I'm saying is this. These are unique times. These are unique times, unprecedented times. And so as a result, everyone's going to have to give a little to make a deal. My problem with the players, and actually, this is really their fault. And when I say their fault, my perception of them. The Major League Baseball Players Union comes off as selfish, clueless, unwilling to compromise, downright arrogant, and oblivious to the realities of the world. And you know whose fault that is? Theirs. Because historically, they operate with a level of arrogance. They're out of touch. They just thumb their noses at people whenever there's someone else expresses a problem with the way things are done in baseball. The MLB Players Union thumbs its nose and says, we don't know what the hell we're talking about. And if now the people like me perceive them as being the real obstacle towards baseball getting back on the field, I'm sorry, that's not my fault. That is theirs for being the pills that they have been over the last however many years, 30, 40, 50 years, wherever you want to draw the line.
They're obstructionist. I think they've been the impediment to the game evolving. I think they've been the problem in most of the big issues that have faced the game over the last several years. I mean, just, you know, off the top of my head, we can go back to the steroid era. It's time to get serious about testing, guys. Congress is up our butt, and it's time to actually start testing for steroids. Nope, not going to do it. Time to speed up the game, guys. You know, we're losing young viewers. The game is ground to a halt. We have record time of game every single year. It's time to speed up the game. Nope, says David Price and the rest of the players. I'm going to take all the time that I need. You can't get in the way of me needing to take extra time to throw the baseball. Nope, we're going to have to collectively bargain that, and I'm not going to give into it. We're not going to agree to a pitch clock. No freaking way. How about just this last thing? There's rampant cheating, guys, with sign stealing, and it's that slowing down the game. And so, you know, we want to get in there, investigate, and punish some players. Nope, we're not going to let you punish any players. Nope, yeah, you can go ahead and punish some managers, punish some front office people, but nope. If you want our cooperation, you have to give us immunity. We are not going to punish ourselves, even though we were blatantly cheating by banging on garbage cans and really making a mockery of the game. So, nope, we're not going to do that. And now here we are with a pandemic, a worldwide emergency. They're trying to jam in 80 games and figure out a way to do it. And they say we're going to try to come up with a creative solution to get this done. And what's the first thing out of their mouth, Scott Boras? We're not renegotiating. All right, F you. F you. It's the players. It's the players. It's almost always the players in that sport. And that exists in no other sport. I'm almost always pro-player union, pro-player. Almost always take their side. Always. The baseball players? Sorry, guys. Sorry. You've stood in the way of too many things. Stood in the way of too many things that had to happen in that sport. And I think you're in the way of this one, too. So go, owners. I hope they take a hard line. And if the players pass, they pass and just shut it down.
And Mike, go ahead, Murray.
Well, time and again, they're just stubborn a-holes. And, you know, the quote that you played yesterday from Mark Teixeira when he was on ESPN saying, I'd rather make pennies on the dollar and give hope to people and play baseball than not make anything and lose an entire year. You know, that's already, like, made players upset. Alex Wood, one of the pitchers from the Dodgers, you know, is blowing him on Twitter saying, I refuse to judge someone I don't really know off one comment. But, damn, this statement is just so stupid, LOL. And, okay, fine. You know, maybe he's just taking the union stance there, but these guys are just so unwilling to budge, and they're proving it again here at the worst possible time.
Well, I'll tell you what, Teixeira softened the message a little this morning, too. So my guess is he heard the grumbling, and he probably got a call from his buddy Boras, who told him to put a sock in his mouth, and that'd be the end of it. And Mike, since you mentioned the cheating thing, tell me there is no better example of how the Major League Baseball Players Association operates than the cheating scandal. They got pissed at the Astros for cheating, but they also wanted to blame Mike Fiers for opening his mouth about it.
Exactly.
So no matter what you do, the Major League Baseball Players Association wants to be right on everything all the time. It's always going to be their way all the time. There's no humility there. There's no willingness to accept responsibility or accountability for anything. It's always someone else's fault.
Yeah, so Boras,
always.
Boras steps up day one. We reached an agreement. There will not be a renegotiation. There will not be a renegotiation of that agreement. Okay, great, Scott. No renegotiating. No problem. See you next year. Bye-bye. Pound sand. Oh, God. I hope that comes to pass. It's all on the players. That's why I was surprised last night to be watching our home network here, NBC Sports Boston, on the TV side. And everyone on TV is like, pro player, pro player, pro player. I was like, come on. Can we get – really? So let's talk to Tomasi next because he was one of these guys. So we'll talk to John Tomasi right after these words.
Boston's home for sports. Fill your mess. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mass.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mass.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, it was a worldwide pandemic. Sports are trying, all businesses are trying to do everything they can to maintain their business keep their doors open, support their employees. Sports, right along with this, every sport scrapping as hard as they can to get back on the field or back on the court or back on the ice and trying to come up with any way they possibly can to salvage part of their business, part of their season. There is only one league that I hear of where they are already bitching about money and the players are already saying, nope, we're not giving back any money. That's baseball. That's the only sport I'm hearing this in right now. And most of it's falling on the players. Our guest on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, John Tomasi, NBC Sports Boston. Hi, John. How you doing?
What's going on? Last time I was on with you, Felger, we were in the Schrafts building.
Oh, my God. That is the drive with Mike Felger on 890 ESPN. Those were some days,
Mike,
buddy.
We found another listener.
There was three. You, Jimmy, and Dale were our three listeners.
That's a long time ago.
So listen, bud, let's not get sidetracked, Tomasi. You think that the heat that the players are getting right now is unfair?
Yeah, I'm frankly astounded at how completely the three of you are letting ownership off the hook on this. I can't really wrap my head around it. It's like your position is basically because it's a pandemic, whatever the billionaire owners offer, you just have to take it.
No.
This is a group of owners who includes, hold on. This is like the Wilpons, the Cheapskate in Pittsburgh, Peter Angelos, the guy who's strip mining the Marlins, like those guys. You're supposed to trust that they're going to make you an equitable offer? Like, I just don't get that. I don't think that you guys would treat your own business lives like that to just take whatever these guys offer you, but that seems to be what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so, John, I'm not saying they should take whatever they're offered. I never said that. What I said was, does everything have to be an insult? In the midst of a pandemic, do they have to treat this negotiation just like they treat every other one that somebody's asking them to cut off their left arm? It just feels to me that any time the Players Association or the Players Union is asked to make a sacrifice, they treat it like they're the only ones in the world that have to make a sacrifice.
See, I don't see it that way. Listen, like, they've already given back half their salary, first of all, because the proration, whatever, if there's 80 games, there's half their salary's gone, which I think we can all agree is reasonable. I don't need to hear from Scott Boras. I'm not going to fight you guys on that whatsoever. If I'm Tony Clark, though, and the owners are leaking details of their negotiation, of their offer, that an offer that I don't think was made in good faith, I think it's incumbent on you to say something. And I don't fault him for saying it one bit.
Oh, I do. It's a, and Tomasi, there are some odious Major League Baseball owners. Absolutely. I agree with you 1,000%. The Players Union is so bad, it has me rooting for them. That's how bad and that's how obstructionist and in the way of the progress of your sport I think that Players Union has been. Only they could get me to root for someone like Peter Angelos or someone like you just mentioned. Only them. And for Tony, I mean, and again, I said this yesterday several times, they're allowed to negotiate and they're allowed to not, you know, push back and not just take the first thing the owners put in front of them. But for Tony Clark to say a system that restricts players pay based on revenues is a salary cap, period. They've been asking us to do that for years. They've failed in the past and it's not going to happen now. They're not, John, they're not asking the players to rewrite the CBA. They're asking them to get through 80 games in a totally unique situation. But Clark immediately goes to the mattresses as if this is some sort of regular CBA negotiation. That, to me, is a horrible look.
See, I think that's a naive viewpoint, though, because the CBA is up. It's up after the 2021 season. And anything you give the owners now can be used against you then. So if I'm a player, that's why I feel like the owner's offer was not made in good faith, because I do actually think they are trying to backdoor a salary cap onto baseball. And if the players accept it for even half of 1 year, then the owners are very much within their rights, because let's face it, this pandemic is still going to be with us after the 2021 season. I don't think that's a stretch of the imagination. So if you play 2 years like that, what's to stop owners from saying any deal that we make moving forward is contingent upon the salary cap?
That's why I think, John, to
use your word, that the owners started there because that's where they're trying to end up.
Okay, John. So they're treating it like a CBA negotiation. There's a pandemic going on. That's exactly our point.
Yeah, but that's both sides. And this is where I say we didn't hear this kind of rhetoric when the two sides reached their March agreement, which was the players would agree to prorated salaries or a share of $170 million if no games were played. That was done amicably, to use a relevant term, I guess, for baseball. And only when the owners started leaking out the details of this proposal which they knew would be a non-starter with the players, did the potential for World War III start. That's why I put this on the owners more than the players. And you guys don't give enough credit. Like I heard Murray yesterday saying, these guys are young, they're healthy, there's no risk. You listen to Sean Doolittle talk about risk. You listen to Andrew Miller talk about it. Even Alex Verdugo, who's nobody's idea of a deep thinker, he's worried about it. Colin McHugh has been worried about it. These guys have spoken, I feel like, honestly and forthrightly about, we're not just risking our own health, which is a big deal, but it's the health of our families, our friends, our coaches who might be older, other people around. I actually find that believable and convincing. And so I think that's where the players want to start with this. And the owners are the ones who made it about money.
Okay, so John, wait a minute, though. The idea, but the owners are not the only ones making it about money. If this is about safety, what the players should be saying is, listen, guys, before we even start talking about the money, we have to feel comfortable getting on the field.
I don't think that is what they did yesterday.
Again, I think they're talking about salary caps, and there's been stuff leaking out from Jeff Pat. As much as the owners are getting criticized for leaking stuff out, which I don't dispute, by the way, they absolutely do. I'm not telling you I'm an owner's. I'm totally on the owner's side of this thing either. The players are doing the same crap. Jeff Passan's been reporting for 2 weeks. The players are not going to react kindly to this. They're not going to react kindly to this. So Passan's been hearing from Tony Clark, chirping in his ear off the record about the same kind of stuff. And I just think the baseball union has too much power, John. It's always had too much power, or at least it has in the last, call it 30 years or so, that they stand in the way of progress of the game. And I'm sorry, if that's my perception that I am putting on this story specifically, that is their fault for how they behaved.
And okay, I'm not going to sit here and defend the union on pace of play or things like that. I'm just saying in this particular instance, you guys are letting the owners off the hook. And I don't want to make it sound like that I'm sitting here saying the players are completely benevolent and that they have no interest in money whatsoever and the owners have forced this on them. I'm not even beginning to suggest that, because you look at the NBA, a league that does not construct proposals without first consulting its players and feels more like a partnership, you don't have these kind of things. So I recognize that there is blame on both sides, but I just don't like hearing that, like you're saying. If the players don't accept it, I hope the owners tell them to shove it and there's no season. The owners did not start this in good faith. I will keep coming back to that. And they are as much, and I would say more, to blame than anyone else.
Well, so I'm not letting the owners off the hook. I'm just picking a side. And so that thing you just said is an extension of it. So, and you know, I feel strongly about it because, by the way, John, if the owners are doing this to backdoor a salary cap in down the line in the next CBA, you know what?
Shameful.
Well, not shameful, but your sport needs it. Oh, by the way, they're right. Oh, by the way, your sport needs a floor, which means it needs a cap, because a massive, massive problem in that game now has become teams with these super tanking strategies of years and years of tanking and taking the year. You know what I'm talking about. Your sport is dying for that, and it needs it. And so you know
but
what?
You know what, Mike?
This you know is what? I'm on the owners on that one. I'm on the owners on that one, too.
This is where I will fundamentally disagree with you. They don't need it. You look at a team like Pittsburgh. You look at most of these owners bought their teams for under $200 million, and all of them are worth $1 billion or more right now. They choose not to put money back into their teams, and that's on them. And so you can say salary cap, but all that does is restrict the salaries at the top. It does not force people at the bottom to pay more. You're saying to put in a floor.
You get a floor, you get a cap. That's the way it works.
It's not going to force the Pittsburgh Pirates to spend the same amount of money. It's willful on the part of these owners not to do it.
No, see, and look, I think that the salary cap thing is a separate issue. I think the sport needs a cap, too. I felt that for a long, long time. But I don't think they should use the pandemic to shoehorn it in there.
And by the way,
I think that's disgraceful.
I don't think they are. I don't think they are. I think it's a completely unique situation, and this is what they came up with. And I just think it's a fair proposal. I think it's a fair proposal now. And if they are using it on the CBA, that's not good form, because we should be all about getting the sport back during a pandemic. So I'm with you. But oh, by the way, if we really go down to it, I think they're in the right on that too. But either way, John, what do you think is going to happen here? What do you think is going to happen? What do you think Major League Baseball is going to look like this year?
I think it's going to be played. I think it's not going to be played under the ownership 50-50 split. I think the players will hold out on that. Maybe they'll defer money. Maybe it'll be some other way to give the owners some savings now, but the players still get paid down the road. But you guys have said it. We've all said it. Baseball has a problem, and you do not solve that problem by becoming the one team that is allowed to return and refusing to do so over money. That is not going to happen. And so they will find a way. And I think yesterday was probably a good first step where the two sides meet, and a lot of it is the discussion is safety from all the reports that we read coming out of that meeting. And so they're focusing on the right things. They did not go in guns blazing on day one like we all predicted, like this conversation would maybe suggest. So I think cooler heads are going to prevail here, and they're going to recognize baseball needs to come back. It'll probably be 80 games. It'll be regional. It'll be largely what the owners have put forth, just not the salary part.
John, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
It's a good conversation.
See you, John.
Enjoyed it. Good phone. He was spicy, scrappy.
So, you know, let me just add to this discussion quickly.
I didn't hang up on him. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not going to snipe at Tomasi now that he's not here.
Do it.
But no, because it's really, it's not what I wanted to say. But this part of it, baseball really should have the easiest road back. It should have the easiest road back. It's the only sport that's non-contact. There's social distancing built into the positioning on the field. They're 20 feet away from each other at a minimum. The pitcher's nowhere near the catcher. The shortstop's nowhere near the second baseman. So fine, there's a runner on first base and he gets a lead. Then the first baseman holds him. For an instant, they're close to one another. The only spot that you look at is, say, when the guy's in the batter's box, he's close to the catcher. In terms of the safety of the players, it should be the sport most perfect for the bubble. Baseball is it. For them to make it this difficult, to me, is embarrassing.
You want to weigh in on the baseball? Open lines for you at 617-779-0985. We'll get to the latest on the NHL and NBA and their return to play. Plans coming up right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
All right, phones as promised. Bob and Easton on the return of Major League Baseball. Hi, Bob.
Well, two things here that come out of this pandemic that I'm hoping helps everybody. The two sports that I loved growing up was basketball and baseball. One, The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, and Felger, I used to agree with you that the competition was terrible, but I'm hoping, I would kill for basketball like that now. So I hope everybody in NBA watches that. Secondly, with baseball, and Jay Stu, you know, with all due respect, I want steroids back in baseball because I know Jay Stu loves wrestling, and he'll pay before you got the hookups, would pay $110, $120, $150 bucks for a ticket because it was entertaining. With baseball, I want it to be entertaining. They're playing baseball in Korea. I watch baseball in Korea now, and the games are faster. Here's an idea, and they have the fake fans. You know, have you guys seen these?
Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely.
So here's an idea, Felger. It's just an idea so they can make their money, so the players can make the money. How about, because you can't get tickets, how about if you send pictures in, if you want to be in the back row like Drinkwater, you pay money to have a picture on a placard, yeah. And you have it all around. You have 4.5 hours to do it. Why not?
Okay, Bob, let me just, overall, my thing with the players, Maz, is I want my sport back. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I grew up the biggest baseball fan. I'm still a fan, but like most of us, you know, the game's gotten away from me because it's just too long and too slow, and it's not the same game I grew up with. And I feel the players are in the way, Maz, of me getting my game back. And so really, when anything comes up, I'm against the players because I think the owners have to take back control of that sport. And well, so see, it sort of feeds into this. It does.
Yeah, so look, again, to me, that's the crux of it, is I have a problem with how the players behave generally. And so when I hear in this thing, you know, well, we're not giving any money back. We already did that. I just say, holy smokes. Talk about a bunch of a-holes. They never want to give up anything. And so, look, there was a time there where I didn't feel this way about the players. I've increasingly become this way in the last few years, and I admit the pace of play thing to me is a big part of it. Their unwillingness to cooperate on pace of play issues, to me, is just thumbing your nose at the people who ultimately pay you, and that's the fan base.
The game needs to evolve on a lot of levels, and I think the players are standing in the way of it.
Oh, totally.
So it does. It ties into this. And so just like Maz, when I hear day one, they're trying to get back on the field in a totally unique circumstance. Day one, they say, nope, we're not renegotiating. I'm like, oh, okay, well, there we go. I would expect nothing less from you guys. Mike in Denver. Go ahead, Mike. God, Mike, that is...
Yeah, that ain't going to work.
Mitch and Hanson. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, guys. So I was born in 94, and from what I understand, baseball was a lot more popular before the strike. I mean, I'm 25 now. I'm a sports junkie, and no one my age or younger cares about baseball, and I agree with you. The players, but the owners need to be on their hands and knees begging these guys to get back in, because you finally have a chance where no one else is playing. You need people to watch your game, and maybe someone will start to care again, because nobody that's 25 or younger cares, and this sport is probably going to be dead in like 30 years.
Thanks, Mike. There is a window there, Maz.
Oh, look, again, the game, what they don't get is that ultimately they're shooting themselves. That's who they're ultimately shooting, is you look at it and say, there's an opportunity here. And we said this from the very beginning. And again, Mike, I can't emphasize this part enough. Baseball has the biggest opportunity here because, in theory, the game should be the easiest to play with social distancing and all these measures. That there's less risk, I think, of any disease spreading in baseball than there is any other sport, because the players aren't all over each other all the time.
And as callers have pointed out, there's, you know, they're already doing it in other parts of the world. And so there's like precedent. There's someone to follow. There's a lead to follow. What are you doing? What's worked? What hasn't worked? Like, there's, you know, that sport globally is ahead of any other.
And just once, you know, I get what Tomasi is saying, that, okay, fine, the owners are trying to shoehorn in, they're trying to backdoor a salary cap. So why is it so difficult for Tony Clark on day one to say, hey, guys, look, we want to play baseball. What we want is some assurance from the owners that they are not going to use anything from the 2020 season as some sort of,
right,
you know, foundation or starting point for negotiations on the next CBA. We regard this time as being extraordinarily unique, a once-in-a-lifetime exception. And as long as they're willing to do that, too, we're happy to talk to them and figure something out.
Instead, he says, they failed in the past, and they're going to fail again.
Like, I mean, is it all right? It's just, it's an immediate turnoff, and I just think they ultimately do themselves a disservice.
All right, we continue with your calls on that, and continue with your calls on the Brady Belichick and McDaniels story, where we started the first hour with Greg Bedard as well. I do want to get to the latest with the NBA, and we'll do it right in our long commercial-free segment next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub, and streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Shaq said scrap the NBA season. You agree, Charles?
Well, I said that a month ago. Right. I think I'm glad Big Fella agrees with me. Listen, it's too dangerous. It's not safe. I don't know how they can make it safe. You know, everybody's talking about putting them in a bubble in Vegas and in Florida, but you can't put the hotel workers in a bubble. You can't keep people who work room service in a bubble and people who work in the hotel. And I'm not sure players want to stay in a hotel for two straight months, because you can't leave a hotel to go out and get something to eat. You got to worry about the virus. So I said that about three, I said, I think it was 3 weeks ago, they should cancel the season.
Charles Barkley on the Dan Le Batard Show. Echoing what Shaquille O'Neal said, which is just shut it down, but the momentum's actually going the other direction. The momentum is that the NBA is going to come back. And the players are expressing that, and the feeling coming out of these conference calls with the owners expressing that. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports reported yesterday that some of the NBA's biggest superstars formed a united front to resume the season during a private conference call on Monday, league sources told Yahoo Sports. Chris Paul, the president of the Players Association, arranged the call that included LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Giannis, Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, and Russell Westbrook. The group's decision is expected to hold significant weight in the decision-making process for the rest of the league's players when it's time to deliberate on whether to restart the season. Woj reported yesterday that the NBA Players Association has informally been sending out text and the survey, do you want to come back and play? The overwhelming response is yes. However, as Haynes reports, and this is an important distinction that I think Maz is sort of narrowing down a take on this, as so am I think. Haynes reported that the majority of players who are essentially eliminated from postseason contention would rather the league start back up just with the top eight teams in each conference completing in some sort of playoff instead of resuming the regular season. And this is something that Adams Himmelsbach wrote about in the Globe as well. Maz, you agree that, or you believe that that's the best course of action for all these leagues?
I do. Yeah, the more that I think about it, and I'll tell you why I feel that way, because I think it's their best chance at success. And when I say, I mean, to me, it's purely a numbers thing. If you've got, you know, 30 teams in the league, and, you know, just to make it easy, half of them are out of playoff contention, aren't going to be in it. Well, then why run an experiment with 800 people or whatever the number is when you can do it with 400? And so I just think it really boils down to that. It eliminates the chance, or, you know, eliminates more chance for error or someone stepping outside of the bubble, and you have fewer people you have to keep it, you know, under control. And I'll take my, and those people will have something at stake, right? So I also think there's that. Like, when you add it all up, the people that want to play are the people that have a chance to win. They have it more at stake. They're more likely to stay within the parameters. And so I like this idea.
Oh, and it's so elementary, and I should have arrived at it sooner, but it's so right on so many levels, because it's the numbers are exponential, Maz, meaning if you have 30 teams as opposed to 16 inside the bubble, well, then you need to have support staff that can support 30 versus 16. So I don't know exactly what that number is, but let's just say 16 teams require 100 people to cook, clean, you know, service the whole thing. Well, if you bring in 30, now that number's 200. So it's like, it's not just the players on teams 17 through 30. It's all the support staff to support those players. And then the testing, it's not just to test those extra players. It's to test all the extra support staff to support the extra players. So, you know, for what? For what? To play out the string for, you know, 14 teams that aren't going to make the playoffs anyway?
Exactly.
That's a waste. So now you're really wasting tests. That's a waste of testing. That's a waste of manpower. That's an unnecessary risk for teams that aren't even playing for anything. And so that's just so basic that that should have occurred to me sooner. But it, you know, I think Himmelsbach points it out well, and, you know, sort of enumerates it well. And I think that's what the NHL should be doing. It's what the NBA should be doing. You're more likely to be able to sell it to the government, to the health officials. You're more likely to pull it off because there's less numbers. And again, it's exponential. So the NBA is talking about letting family members into the bubble. Well, I mean, so for every player, that's you get four people, five people. I don't know what they decide on, but the 12 players on the 14 extra teams, do the math, and then four or five family members for each of those extra players, do the math, and then the testing needed for all those extras, do the math, and then the support people, the cooks, the cleaners, all that to support those. It's ridiculous. There's no way those extra teams should be allowed in there.
No. In fact, really what it comes down to is manageability. It's just way more manageable. And again, it's going to be hard enough to pull off no matter what. But when you the more people you involve, like anything in life, the more people you involve, the harder it gets to pull off.
The people are the problem.
Because people suck, right? And, you know, people don't stay within the boundaries. People don't stay within the rules. They don't respect other people's wants and needs in space. And so ultimately what you're going to have is some sort of calamity. So this thing is going to be hard enough as is. And so why do it with, again, 1,000 people when you can cut it in half right out of the gate and start with 500?
So,
and to me, it makes all the sense in the world.
As it relates to the NHL, I've been saying play some regular season games to eliminate those bubble teams and get everybody up to speed. But you know what? No, 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 no. It's just you're just creating extra work and extra risk. And, you know, this is going to be crowbarring this thing in to begin with. So make it easy on yourself. The playoff teams, Murray.
Yeah, and with the NBA, though, the thing that I'm a little curious about is why Adam Silver told those teams that he talked to everyone yesterday, but he's going to make a decision as to whether or not to resume or cancel in 2 to 4 weeks. So, I mean, don't they have their framework in place right now? Why do you need that extra time? And when I read that, I immediately think, well, he's still waiting to see what these states that are being reopened, what they look like. And they're the test subjects, essentially. And so if the numbers are bad, well, then it's going to be canceled. I just think don't you already know whether or not you're going to do this or not? To wait that extra time is like, I just feel like you're waiting for bad news.
So I don't think they need to announce it, though. If they're still working behind the scenes on it and getting it all in place, so you're not announcing something publicly that you then have to backtrack, I don't know. I'm not sure how to read that, Maz. And that is what Silver said today, or the report today. But anyway, this thing about, you know, Himmelsbach wrote, the other benefit to freezing the standings and slicing the field to 6 teams, it would allow the NBA to hold the draft lottery during this quiet period. So there you go. You get your 14 lottery teams, have the draft lottery. We're starving for content, starving for anything that's sort of a live sports tie-in at all. The NFL draft did gangbusters. So, and I'd say this to the NHL, too. Get your 16 teams, have your draft, for crying out loud, if you want. But the NBA can certainly have their draft lottery. That's another one. Himmelsbach also writes this. It sounds as though the NBA will look to minimize the team's traveling parties. There could be some tough decisions about leaving some staff members at home, but the games can go on just fine with 2 or 3 coaches per team instead of 9, which I agree with. I mean, look at those NBA benches now. It's ridiculous, the number of guys in suits. Guys and gals in suits. You really need all those assistants. He says, as for the media, it seems most likely that a bubble scenario would leave us out too. Perhaps leading to post-game Zoom interviews. It wouldn't be ideal, but nothing about these times is ideal. In terms of the families, so there's going to be a battle on that too. Are you allowed wife and kids? What if you're not married? Stepkids, half-kid, blah, blah, blah. Like, that opens up a whole can of worms, and that's... I'm glad that's not on my plate, telling those guys who they can and can't bring in. But Adam raises this point, which I never thought of either. If it is deemed safe and there is ample testing, these friends and family members should be allowed to attend the games. Also, all the service people who aren't working at that moment, the food service people, the cleaners, the hotel workers, as long as they're in the bubble and tested, they should be allowed in the arena too. So, maybe it's not exactly without fans, but if they're all in the bubble, then you could get a couple thousand people in those little gyms and get a little bit of atmosphere out of the thing. I never thought of that, but it's true. If they're all tested and all safe, you can let them in the building.
Well, and Himmelsbach even made the analogy of, like, it'd be like a high school game where you could hear the parents yelling out there with their kids, you know? And I like the idea. I think Barkley, in his assessment of it, missed the boat when he says, well, you're not going to keep the workers inside the bubble. You're not going to keep the restaurant people inside the bubble. No, you are. You are. This is the point, is that you are literally sealing the thing off so that everybody in that bubble, the people that are hired to work in the hotels and the restaurants and wherever else, those people are part of the operation. They are going to be tested. And so, you know, to me, I think that's the part he misses. I want to see them try. And to answer Murray's question about the 2 to 4 weeks, I wonder, and I know I keep coming back to the same thing. I wonder if they're just waiting to see, what the level of testing is like in another month. Because I thought we would be much farther along in volume of tests right now than we are at this point. And so it is, and I'm not telling you it's as bad as it was at the beginning. There are more tests, but there still aren't enough to pull off the stuff we want to pull off in the sports world. And I got to believe that that's a factor, too.
Okay, so your thoughts on this. Add it to the list at 617-779-0985. One thing that I don't want to hear from Charles or Shaq or anyone else is this asterisk business. I don't believe in that. I know Stephen A. had a strong thought about that as well. You'll hear it coming back after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials, and again, your calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.